Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A truck slowly drives by your house at night, with a cloud of fog coming out from behind it. It might seem creepy, but that fog is effectively synthetic chrysanthemum water that was specifically engineered to target mosquitoes based on their flight patterns. Welcome to Tiny Vampires, a podcast about disease, science, and blood-sucking insects, a member of the Agora Podcast Network. I'm Raven Forrest Rescalzo, your host. I'm here today with a guest, Sam Steins.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to be here with you. My name is Sam Steins. I'm a biologist with a company called VDCI, or Vector Disease Control International. And they've been around for over 30 years, and we do public health mosquito control and vector control. So all we do is mosquitoes and ticks and blood-sucking insects. I graduated with a biology degree from the University of New Orleans, which is an accredited school. We don't just drink there. We do study and those type of things. But I've been in this line of business for nearly 18 years now, and our company does a lot of response to emergencies such as virus event when we find virus in populations, as well as hurricanes and the mosquitoes that come after. It's a great job. It's something I never thought I'd be kind of pulled into. I don't like mosquitoes, which is a good thing, and that's why I'm here.
Whenever I tell people that I do this show or that I study mosquitoes, they always worry that I'm going to get upset if they kill one. and I'm like, you know, I have probably killed more mosquitoes in 1 month than you have killed in your entire life. So we're talking about mosquito fog trucks. Dee Jacob sent in a question because her area that she lives in was one of the places that had that outbreak of Eastern equine encephalitis. So she was hearing a lot of anxiety about the disease, but also a lot of anxiety about all of the fog trucks that were driving around in their neighborhoods. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come on and answer Dee's question. And I'm sure like a lot of people have thought about this. Like even me, when I was a little kid, I lived in Florida. And I remember the trucks driving around my neighborhood and having all kinds of questions about them. So,
absolutely. And back then, you didn't mind running through it and getting covered with it and not knowing what it was.
Yeah, my dad has all kinds of stories about that. And there's been so much science that happens every year. So from outward appearances, the truck driving down the road all slow at night, it might seem the same, but there's so much more thought that goes into it now than used to be.
Oh, there really is. There's tracking, there's GPSs, there's metrics on how much is coming out, and there's it's pretty scientific, which is good. It's good.
Why is spraying so important for public health?
Well, first of all, we need to decrease those vectors. So what we do is just really manage risk, and we look at what are the possibilities of transmission, and how do we lessen that risk? How do we reduce those mosquitoes to levels that we feel are safe for people to be outside and enjoy the environment? That's mainly why we're spraying. And of course, down here in southern Louisiana, we have tidal flows and we have big hurricanes. And on the backside of those hurricanes, we'll have incredible numbers of mosquitoes. And it'll make a area uninhabitable. And so we will often have to use planes or use trucks and use those adulticides to get those levels down so that not only humans, but animals can stay healthy and enjoy the environment. It feels good to be in the public health sector, and it feels good to be helping. It's hard to see people get sick. It's hard for family members to get sick. So it feels good to be a part of that. You know, we also raise them. We have a couple biologists whose sole job is to go out and grab these things, bring them back to our lab, and then treat them as children. And we raise them up and feed them. And we're doing that in order to test it against the tools that we have, the pesticides that we use. And so we're constantly looking for a buildup of tolerance. And we're using a certain type of mosquito. So the one that is normally the vector for West Nile virus, the Southern House mosquito, these are ones with high levels of genetic diversity. They breed really fast, and you'll have multiple generations very quickly. And so they're the ones we want to test against. They're the most hardy. They breed in these kind of really septic. This could be motor oil. This could be sewage. It could be dishwasher liquid. So these things are really hardy. And unfortunately, they're the top vector for disease in our area.
Although we were talking about West Nile, the mosquito control methods for Eastern equine encephalitis would be really similar to West Nile, right?
They would. With a little bit of difference with the species that you're targeting. You do adapt a little bit differently what type of situation and what type of mosquito you're going after. But you're using the same methodology, and you're using the same type of chemicals to target those guys. Our girls. And mosquitoes are different. So, you know, there's 50 to 60 species in any given area, and they all act a little differently. You know, some of them bite worms, some of them bite frogs or alligators, and so we don't worry about those. Mm. But there's about a dozen that do carry disease or come out in such numbers that that you have to take action. And so when we find those, then we'll target those, and they come out at different times at night, so we'll make sure our applications are going after those particular species of mosquitoes.
Right. So that's one of the things that I think kind of creeps people out a little bit about what people call the fog trucks, is that it seems they seem kind of creepy coming out at night.
It is a weird noise, and yeah, it is kind of creepy going down the street slowly, and I could see that.
But that's the reason behind it, is that the mosquitoes that are transmitting the diseases, that's like basically that's their vulnerable time, right?
Absolutely. That's the active time. You're right. So there are a couple mosquitoes that do come out during the day, but I would say 99% of them do come out in the evening time and go to the wing, so to speak. And that's one of the key components of our spray, is we need the insects has to be flying. The way the wing pattern of a mosquito is, if you stretch your arms out to your sides as far as they'll go, I don't know what yoga pose that is, but if you do that and you make the infinity sign or you make the figure eight sign with your arms, you're actually flying like a mosquito. And so that motion brings in those little droplets that we're spraying and lets that chemical impinge on their body. And because one or two droplets isn't really going to do anything, they need to be out there flying and helping to draw that chemical into them. And that's one of the advantages too, because non-targets don't normally do that same motion. And non-targets like butterflies or bees, they're at the hive or they're hunkered down for the night. So mosquitoes are out and they're doing that motion to help us kill them.
Yeah. So this isn't, we'll just spray randomly and see what happens. There's so much knowing mosquito physiology, knowing mosquito flight patterns, when they're the most active and vulnerable. And so there's so much science that gets put into this, right?
There really is. There really is. And even to the size of the droplet, that are about half the size of human hair. And the amount of active ingredient in each of those little tiny droplets, you know, we don't want to kill non-targets. So we make sure we throw enough of those BBs out there to connect with the mosquito. But the mosquito has to help out, has to do some of the work and get that lethal dose so that we don't harm other things. And yeah, absolutely. And of course, the way we know that there are certain mosquitoes in the area is just by surveillance. Adulticiding or killing the adult population of mosquitoes with insecticides is kind of the last ditch effort. It's actually very hard because there's a lot of trees, there's houses, there's a lot of blockade to your chemical. It's hard to get that chemical to them. So if we can begin by doing surveillance and looking for what mosquitoes are where, and then maybe we find the immature mosquitoes and we use a different type of chemical, bacterial chemical, what we call biorational chemical, something that comes from nature that's safe, and we target those immature mosquitoes and before they even become adults, and it's better on the environment. It's actually cheaper, and when you consider that one mosquito can lay up to 200 eggs at a time, you want to get those baby mosquitoes.
So it's basically the bacteria is almost like a natural predator that you're using instead of having to resort later to the chemical sprays.
Absolutely. And it's safe for mammals. It's safe for your dog to drink. We don't have the enzyme to break apart that little toxin in the bacteria. But the mosquitoes do.
So basically, can you just talk about like how you guys make the decisions on when to spray and or when to hold off?
Yeah, basically, we have a lot of information that comes in on a daily basis. So we're setting out surveillance traps almost daily and doing something called a landing rate, where they'll go into an empty lot or a bunch of trees, and they'll sit there and they'll see what kind of mosquitoes are landing on them. So
that's a sacrifice, right?
It is, yeah. We don't tell the new employees that they're getting into that. That's a second week instruction,
yeah.
So that they don't run.
Not part of the job interview.
No, not at all. But very important. And so we associate different values with the type of mosquito that they are, and then the number of mosquitoes. If we have certain mosquitoes that maybe aren't medically important or aren't vectors of disease, but are a very nuisance biters, you're taking that information, you're speciating all the mosquitoes from those traps, you're sending certain medically important ones off to state labs, or you're testing them, and you're gathering that information. You're also collecting information from residents that are calling. You're also taking the environment into check. I know oftentimes when we get into periods of drought, we get a little nervous because the mosquitoes are using the same water source as the birds. And the birds, of course, are the reservoirs for the disease. So we start to look back in our books and look in the computer and see where our known spots are for these puddles. We take all that information and we put it into a mind of a biologist, and I don't know what happens at that point, but they shake it around, and then and then that's how we decide where we're going to send trucks, or decide where we're going to send crews to larvicide.
The people who are making those decisions, it's not something that they take lightly.
No, not, and it's very difficult. I have to say that the EPA is actually helping out in this. They've gotten a lot more strict in recent years. You know, some of that policy has gotten relaxed as of late, but it's still pretty strict, which is very good, and it's very good for us. For instance, on the labels, you're only allowed to apply so much of the active ingredient per year, and some of these products that we have contain similar active ingredients, and so you have to watch that. You can't just spray when you want to, and you can't just spray at high label rates and think that you're going to be okay. So you have to rotate. And then they also make it so that you can't spray on just continuous nights back to back. They want you to relax that pressure on the environment. And those are great things. Those are things that you have to do. You have to be good steward of the environment because we need it. They had something that came out called the Clean Water Act. And so mainly that is to prevent discharge from going into streams and then going down rivers and affecting people's water. And it was kind of all inclusive. It didn't only deal with that, but it also made you take note and have a reason for applying. You need a certain number of mosquitoes, or they have to be a certain vector of disease, and they have to be at a certain number. And so you have to have a good reason to spray and apply those adulticides, which I think is great.
Right. When you're thinking about all these different aspects of public health, water quality is an aspect of public health as much as preventing mosquito-borne diseases. So it's kind of a way of combining all of these different ideas and making sure that we're not sacrificing one for another.
That's a great way to put it. Yep.
So we've kind of talked about the thought behind spraying and everything, but what exactly is the spray? Like, what are those active ingredients?
Well, mainly they're pyrethrins, which are kind of a synthetic version of a natural insecticide that's found in chrysanthemum plants. We don't have very many tools to use in mosquito control. So they've done some tweaking of the molecule, and that tweaking of the molecule is categorized as a pyrethroid. So it's kind of like a humanoid. It's mimicking something. So we're mimicking that natural molecule inside that chrysanthemum. And so that's one class of chemical. And then we also use a little bit of organophosphates, and mainly from the plains, because they have a little different mode of action, which is good because we need to rotate different tools and different chemicals at these mosquitoes so they don't build up tolerance. So we need those different modes of action. But the ones that we drop from the plane actually weigh a lot. It's like 16 pounds per gallon. Mm-hmm. So one of the important things is when you're dealing with applying, and this chemical normally goes about 300 feet, you have to watch where you're drifting. You have to watch because you have things like hypersensitive residents that don't want the effects of the mosquitoes. So they'll call us and we'll make a buffer zone around them. But you also have bees, and you have other types of insects and arthropods that people are caring for, organic gardens and those type of things. So you have to be careful with drift. So the good thing about that chemical that we're applying from the plane is it's very heavy. And so we want it to go where we need it to go and nowhere else. So we have those tools, and that's basically what we're spraying. And the dose is very small. We apply the chemical based on pounds per acre, and it's like 0.0035 permethrin pounds per acre. And so when you consider an acre is about a football field, that's less than the little sugar packet for that whole football field. So, and we're splitting that up into droplets. The good thing about that is mosquitoes are tiny. And when you consider a dragonfly or a bee, it's not having much effect on those. And luckily, they're not out at the time we're spraying anyway, but it wouldn't have a big effect on those because the droplets are so small and the active dose is so small. The chemical that we're using is very low toxicity. And when you speak of risk, it's toxicity versus times exposure. So the chemical to begin with at our concentration is very safe. And it's also based on exposures.
Somebody who might have the truck driving down the road by their yard, their exposure is going to be so minimal that it's really nothing to worry about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would make the argument that a lot of the chemicals that you have underneath your sink that you use to clean are way more toxic to you than the chemical that we're applying.
A while back in episode 19, we talked about permethrin and pyrethroids and how physiologically the reason why they don't affect people. So we're not going to get too far into why it's not so toxic to humans, but it is toxic to insects. You guys can listen to that episode if you want more information about that. The thing to cover now is the concern about what you were saying before, these off-target effects. Are we concerned about these insecticides killing things other than mosquitoes?
We are definitely concerned with that. And the good thing is there's a lot of research that's continually being done. This is it's a pretty hot topic. And one person that I would recommend that maybe you look to on your show is Dr. Kristen Healy, who is with Louisiana State University. And she's done a lot of bee research. Her and her husband are big in the bees, and they're also part of the community when it comes to mosquito control. So she's bridged that gap. Her research and her suggestions go far. And when it goes to non-targets such as bees, it's mitigation of risk. We're spraying at a time in the evening time when the bees are back in the hive, and we're talking with beekeepers to know where their hives are so that we can turn the spray off and we can lessen the chance of them becoming hit. She's also doing some research into crawfish. Crawfish are big down here in the South, and they're around the areas that we spray. So there's a lot of research being done, and it's great research, and we need to take that and utilize it best we can. And really becoming part of the community, when you have these beekeeper communities are very, very large organizations. We just went to one in the state of Mississippi. We have a program out there, and they were so responsive, and they want you to know where they are so that you can mitigate that risk. But they also want to help out best as possible too. They realize that mosquitoes do cause problems and they carry disease. And so they would like you to spray, and they just want to know, and they want to take part by covering or moving those hives to an area where it's not going to be affected by the spray. So it's a group effort. And I have to say that it's always been positive when the two sides get together and they start talking and really educating each other on needs and concerns. And who doesn't want to be friends with the beekeeper communities? Because the last time we went, we just got tons of honey, and it was fantastic.
It might not be something that people think of directly. Your guys' work is really saving lives. Every time there's an outbreak of a disease, it's really life-saving work.
It is, and it's what keeps you going.
The one-to-one of, I see a truck and I don't get sick, it's not something that we necessarily are thinking about.
It comes with a certain level of a responsibility, too. You are applying pesticides in the air, and you have to be very responsible in how you deal with those pesticides.
Yeah, once again, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I've enjoyed talking with you. And if anyone ever has any questions, you know, I'm with VDCI, and we have entomologists on staff, and they can contact or they want to just talk about mosquitoes in their area, and we can talk with them about that.
Fantastic.
We talked a little bit about the larvicides that mosquito control programs use, but we didn't get too far into it. If you want to hear more about mosquito-killing bacteria and other control methods, just let me know. Sam offered to come back on anytime if you guys want to hear more about boots-on-the-ground tiny vampire slaying. For the Agora podcast announcement this month, I want to tell you about the Podcastinic Network. It's not just a group of podcasts, but also YouTube channels, too. You can find all of them at podcastnik.com. That's podcast N-I-K. As someone who uses a mobility device myself, I especially love their channel Past Access. It's a great show that demonstrates that history and travel can be accessible to anyone. Thank you to Title Card Music and Sound for our intro and outro music. Until next month, let your neighbor know that her local vector control people are pretty friendly and can help out with those pesky mosquitoes without hurting her bees.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.